Hello, and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm John McGee. Today, we're presenting our long-awaited and much-trailed Baseball Books podcast. Now, before I explain how it's going to work, I'm going to introduce our panel. First up, it's Baseball Prospectus's newest contributor, Wales's only paid baseball writer, Darius Austin. This has been a pretty big week for you, Darius. Pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, it is exciting. Yeah, I'm just waiting for somebody to come along and tell me that they are also in Wales getting paid to write about baseball. It seems unlikely, but yeah, I'd love to hear from someone else in Wales writing about baseball.
Yeah, if you're listening in Pontypridd or the Gower Peninsula and you want to tell us you're writing about baseball, then answers on a postcard, please.
Yeah.
Right, and secondly, is a man who has some real credentials. We decided when we were looking around ourselves that we didn't really have enough, and so we've called in a ringer, so to speak. And that is the former MLB editor for Sporting News and the presenter of over 100 episodes of the excellent Baseball by the Book podcast. That's Justin McGuire. How are you this afternoon, Justin?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely no problem. It's a pleasure to have you, and hopefully you're going to bring some order to the chaos that's going to be the selection of baseball books that you can find here in the UK.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best. Obviously, I don't have a real good handle on what is all available to you in the UK, but I'll talk about the books that I like, and if people are interested, they can probably track them down somewhere.
Yeah. The internet's a brilliant thing and certainly helped expand quite a few of our horizons. But some of those postage fees are pretty brutal. But we'll see what we can see what you say, and then we'll decide how much you convince us.
All right, sounds good.
And by all means, lastly, a man who this week wrote a blog about a baseball playing traffic cone. It's Tom Pringle. What the hell was all that about?
I've been quite bored during the off season, and I just wondered if we replaced Pablo Sandoval from the Red Sox with a traffic cone, how much better the Red Sox would be. And in my fantasy world, it seemed it'd just be exactly the same.
Yeah, probably less likely to boot something into the outfield, to be honest. But there we go. Okay, so I said just at the start there that we have drawn some parameters around this. Now, as we've noticed on our Twitter feed, it seems that most of our followers, and certainly we're no different, could talk about baseball books every single minute of every single day. So we wanted to sort of draw it in a little bit to ensure that we didn't have a sort of 10-hour long podcast that literally no one would want to listen to. So we're going to try and keep it lean and we're going to keep it tight. And this being baseball, we're going to do it as a draft, of course. So what we're going to do is each of the four of us who are here today, unfortunately, you are going to hear my choices. I'm not just here to facilitate. I can't keep my oar out of it. We're going to pick two of our favorite baseball books, and we're going to pick one book which has let us down a little bit. Maybe a book that's got a really excellent reputation that we didn't quite feel hit the spot for us. And we're going to talk a little bit about each, and hopefully everyone will chip in and say, I like this, I didn't like that, ask a few questions about it if we didn't know that particular book. So we'll do that in a second. But given we've got Justin here, it would be remiss not to ask a few questions about the podcast, Justin. So how did you get the idea to start it? I mean, it seems a pretty facile question, given that we're here talking about baseball books and they're a brilliant thing in and of themselves. I'm guessing that you yourself are a huge fan.
Yeah, I'm somebody who, loves baseball and loves reading. So I've always read a lot of baseball books. And at some point, I can't tell you honestly when, at some point I got it in my head, it would be interesting to do a podcast about baseball books. And I think it's because I love hearing interviews with authors, not just of baseball books, but of any kind of book that I'm interested in. There's, any podcast or radio show that's interviewing an author of a nonfiction book that I'm interested in, I tend to listen to it. So I think that kind of spurred me on and said, hey, what if I did this? And it was something I put in the back of my pocket for a long time and never did anything with. And then, unfortunately, in late 2016, I got laid off from Sporting News, and I suddenly found myself with a lot of free time. So I said, this is the time to do it. I knew some authors from Twitter and got a few of them lined up and just started it. And it's really gone well since then. I've had great response, and really the authors have been great, and the response from the listeners has been great. And it's been a lot of fun. And since I am, I am looking for work at the moment, I do have time to do a lot of them. So I tend to do two a week, and I've been able to do, like you said, more than 100 in a little bit over a year.
Yeah, and we were talking just before we started the broadcast and saying that it was it's well worth a follow. If people aren't following it already, then make sure that you look up Justin. We'll tweet out your particulars, of course, when this is posted. But follow it, and we'll give you every opportunity to plug it at the end. We're going to cover some of the subjects of your interviews and your podcasts later on when we choose our books, because bit of a drawing back of the velvet curtain, but we did share with one another the titles that we're going to choose to try and ensure that we had as broad a coverage as possible. So I know for a fact that at least two of your recent interviewees are going to come up again later in the conversation. But I wondered if there were any that maybe we might have missed that maybe aren't quite so well known that you want to draw attention to that you thought were really interesting to be on the other end of the conversation, at the other end of the microphone talking to. Were there any that you think stick out particularly?
Yeah, I'll mention a few that I really enjoyed the conversation and I really enjoyed the book. That maybe are a little bit lesser known than some of the other ones we're going to be talking about today. There's a book that I first became aware of when I was a child in the 1970s. It's called The Great American Baseball Card Flipping, Trading, and Bubblegum Book. And it's literally these two guys. They were, at the time they wrote it in the 70s, they were in their 20s. They sort of wrote a book. It was looking back at their childhoods in the 50s. And they basically took the one guy's baseball card collection and just, you know, reproduce pictures of it and had commentary on it. And so again, it's a book I had been familiar with since I was a kid. And then I just happened to, one of the authors actually found me on Twitter after I started doing this. And so I was really shocked by that. And I got him on, and it was just a great conversation to talk to him about. His name is Fred Harris. You can find him on Twitter. But to talk to him about that book that I had been reading since I was about 10 was a lot of fun. And just to hear how that book came about and, you know, his experience doing it at a time when it wasn't easy to find any information on these cards. Or, you know, you couldn't just look it up on Google back then, you know, to find these cards from the 50s. And it's the funniest baseball book I think I've ever read. It's hilarious. And that one's a little bit tough to find probably, but if you can, I recommend that one. It's a lot of fun. A couple of others that I'll mention. There's a book called Bottom of the 33rd, which is about the longest baseball game ever played. It was between the Rochester Red Wings and the Pawtucket Red Sox in 1981. And the game took place in Pawtucket on Easter Saturday. It started on Saturday evening and went into Easter. And I think they finally called it at about 4 a.m., and then came back and finished it a few months later in the 33rd inning. It went to the 33rd inning. And it was a game involving Cal Ripken Jr. was on the Red Wings. Wade Boggs was on the Pawtucket Red Sox. But it's just the book that this guy, his name is Dan Barry. He's a New York Times writer. It's just really fascinating because it's really about more than just the game. It's about the city of Pawtucket, which he goes into a lot of depth about the situation they were in 1981. He talks to several of the players who are involved with the game, looking primarily at the guys who never made it in the majors, you know, and what that's like. He kind of gives their life story, and the guy who had the game-winning hit and how that sort of – he never made it to the majors, and that's sort of the one thing he's been known for his whole life, and some of his problems with alcoholism later in his life and that sort of thing. It's just a really fascinating character study of these players and of the place and of the time, and I really highly recommend that one as well. And I'll throw out just one more real quick, which is by a guy named Ryan McGee, who works for ESPN, and he's primarily a NASCAR and college football guy for them. But he wrote this book a few years ago called The Road to Omaha, which is about the College World Series. He went to the College World Series, I think it was in 2006, and he basically just wrote a book about that College World Series, and, you know, followed around the teams and the coaches and gave all sorts of background. And it's a really, really fun read and an interesting look at something that doesn't get written about much. I mean, it's easy enough to find books about the major leagues and even the minor leagues, but there's not very much written on American college baseball. And this is certainly, you know, obviously the highest level when you're talking about the College World Series. And, you know, just a look at Omaha and how important that event is to them. And again, at these lifers in college baseball, the coaches and that sort of thing. All that was a really interesting book too. And again, I think it's, you know, probably didn't get a ton of attention because college baseball isn't as big here as, you know, college football and college basketball, but it's well worth the read if you have any kind of interest in, you know, non-professional baseball.
Those all sound really awesome. Certainly for me, I haven't got a notebook in front of me, but luckily I get the pleasure of editing this, so I can make sure that I write them down when I listen back to this, particularly those last two. As a person who's interested in sort of economic and psychogeography, the Paul Tuckett in 1981 and why the College World Series is important to Omaha sounds right up my street. Yeah. The last question I wanted to ask you before we get cracking was what your view is on why baseball sort of draws in the titans of American literature, so to speak. So the John Updikes and the Michael Chabons and Don DeLillo, who, lest we forget, wrote a whole book about a single baseball hit by a British man. So what is it that you think draws these great titans of American literature to the sport of baseball?
Yeah, I wish I had a good succinct answer for you, but it's absolutely true. I mean, you go back as far as, you know, Walt Whitman, who's maybe the greatest American poet. I mean, he has this famous quote from when he was a newspaper reporter in the 1840s about, "I see great things for baseball. It is America," and all the, you know, this kind of this quote you see in the, you know, Ken Burns and all this stuff. You know, you mentioned some of those guys, but also Ernest Hemingway wrote, you know, The Old Man and the Sea, which has a lot of baseball content in it, and a lot of talk of Joe DiMaggio in particular, and how he's kind of a symbol of perseverance for this old fisherman. And it is a theme throughout American literature, like you said. And I think it's the biggest reason, I would say, is probably because, you know, baseball is the sport that has always been there in America, you know, since the beginning, really. Again, I mentioned Whitman in the 1840s. It was something that the, you know, Civil War players were playing, you know, Civil War soldiers were playing in the 1860s. It was the American sport for 100 years until, you know, American football and basketball started overtaking it, you know, 30 years ago or so, or 40 years ago. So it's really the thing it's a common theme, and it's a common cultural reference, really, for generations of Americans. And I think that's really the main reason. It was, you know, to be a baseball fan was to be an American in a lot of ways, in the 20th century, particularly.
Yeah, I think you said trying to be succinct on that was difficult, but you have been. I think that I think you've encapsulated that in a nutshell. I was just about to sort of say I totally agree with you, but then I recognize that as a man who's coming from the former overlords of the states, that was probably the most patronizing thing you'd ever heard. So we'll move swiftly on from that. And I promised myself that I wouldn't sit here and read out whole screeds of Hub fans bid kid adieu, which is John Updike's famous essay about Ted Williams. But if anyone's listening to this and hasn't read that particular piece of literature, then they should stop listening right away and go and read that first, and then start listening again right away. So from John Updike, the sublime, to the ridiculous again, Tom, of course, you knew that was going to be coming to you. We'll start with you. So we're going to start with the good, of course. And Tom, I think the first book that you specifically wanted to talk about was one which Justin has spoken about recently on the podcast, which is The Bad Guys, won by Jeff Pullman. So can you just tell us why that is on your list?
Yeah, it's not one of the classics, so to speak, the baseball classics. As people probably know, and you certainly know, John, I'm quite new to the sport, and what I'm trying to do is learn as much of the history of the sport that I can. And I was recommended this book a long time ago from a Mets fan, unsurprisingly. And for me, it really sort of encapsulates one of the seasons for the Mets and them going into the 86 World Series, and obviously beating the Red Sox. But what's great about it is it sort of builds up the history of the Mets to begin with, a very, very short history, and then goes into this season itself. And as Justin mentioned on his podcast with Jeff, the opening scene of the book is just superb. It's absolutely brilliant, where you've just got players on this aircraft just absolutely blind drunk. They've drunk all the booze in, I think it's the front cabin, then they've moved to the back cabin, they're drinking all the booze there. There's rookies being sick because they can't cope with it, but they want to carry on and keep boozing. And the book is just a real sort of sign of the times, where there was none of this checking your diet and making sure you're well hydrated. It was all how much can you drink, how much drugs can you get away with, and can you still go and play baseball and do well. It's such a great page turner. Jeff Pullman, I didn't actually realize until listening to Justin's podcast that it's actually his first book, but it is excellent. It's so easy to read, and the chapters are so quick to get through. Not that they're short and sharp, but that you just fly through them so quickly. For any Mets fan, they have to have this. It's such an important book, and it's such an important part of their history, and to be able to read it. To be fair, Justin, I remember listening on the podcast and you were talking about it, and I wanted to ask actually, what was it like to watch baseball during that year? Were the Mets generally hated by everyone, and were the Red Sox even a competitive rival, or was it almost a foregone conclusion that they were going to steamroll?
Yeah, the Mets were, I mean, I think the book gets to this in a lot of ways, but the Mets had been pretty good in 84 and 85. And in 85, I think they just fell short of making the playoffs to the Cardinals. So I think going into 86, as I recall it, there was just a feeling that they were definitely the favorites to win the division. And then once they got off to the great start, I forget the exact numbers, but they were by early May, it was clear that they were going to win the division. They were the story of that year. They were the only team anyone talked about. I mean, nobody talked about the Red Sox or the Astros or the Angels. You know, it was the Mets year. In some ways, maybe it was akin to maybe the Cubs a couple of years ago. It just seemed like that was the story of the year, and that was the thing everybody was talking about. And then when they did have such a hard time beating the Astros and then the Red Sox, I think people were really surprised. They sort of expected them to steamroll everybody. And they did. And obviously, particularly the Red Sox, they very easily could have and probably should have lost that series in six games. And yeah, but in terms of them being the bad guys, yeah, they definitely had an aura of kind of being the bad boys about them. Now, we didn't know everything then that we know now in terms of the drug use and all that stuff, but we did know that they were arrogant and had an attitude, and they were a New York team through and through.
I was going to just go on from that, Justin, to say you had Jeff on very recently, and was there anything that you learned from that conversation that you didn't know, having been around in 1986, as you just said, and knowing about that team as you did, other than the obviously, which features heavily in the podcast for those who haven't heard it, the execrable Let's Get Mesmerized, which I read the book, so I knew about it, and the treat for my ears as I was walking along the road on Friday evening that was Daryl Strawberry rapping.
Oh my God.
I was driving back from my parents' house after going up there for the weekend, and my daughters were both fast asleep in the back, and every time those Mets tracks come on, I had to turn it right the way down because all I could do was keep laughing. And the music, my wife was getting so annoyed because she thought my daughters are going to wake up in the back of the car.
Glad I can help. No, I mean, let me just say this about get Mesmerized. Anybody listening to this who hasn't heard it, you should listen to my podcast. But if you'd be short of that, go to YouTube and look up Get Mesmerized. It's you can listen to the whole song there. I can't describe it. There's just no way to describe how bad it is. And you said like Daryl Strawberry rapping in a way that I know it's not clear he even knew exactly what rapping was, you know, that he just doesn't even, there's no sense of rhythm or, you know, structure, or he's just sort of like saying the words, and it's so great. But in terms of what I learned from Jeff, I'd say the thing that I learned from him is the thing that I always try to learn in these podcasts, was just a lot about the process of putting the book together. Like, I was really interested to learn that he talked to Jay Horowitz, who's the longtime Mets PR guy, who I had dealt with some when I was at Sporting News, because he was, you know, we always had to deal with the team reps when we were doing the awards. Just to learn how helpful he was, and that he had all these binders that he gave him, full of Mets clippings. And that's the thing that always interests me the most in these interviews, is just learning about the process of putting the book together. Because you read a book, and if it's a book you enjoy, it's just there. You know, he has all this information and it's all in his head. But the reality is, it's a long process to get good information. And I'm always interested to know how writers go about doing that.
Great. So I think we'll move on to Darius now. He was going to start off by talking about a book that I don't think you have had the author of this one on, which is Prophet of the Sandlots. So Darius, this is a bit of a sort of legendary book, certainly in certain circles of baseball Twitter and the baseball internet. So what is it about Prophet of the Sandlots that's so special?
Well, I've got my props here, and everybody enjoys it when I bring the props along. So if you're looking for the book, this is my copy. I will say that it is one of these that appears to be notoriously hard to get hold of. And some copies go for ludicrous amounts on the internet, as I think Tom was having fun looking up on Amazon when I brought it up a little while ago. But it's about a scout called Tony Lucadello, who is widely considered, I think, to be the greatest Major League scout of all time. In the end, he signed over 50 guys who made it to the Major Leagues. Most notably, probably, is Mike Schmidt, the Hall of Fame third baseman for the Phillies. So he was obviously an exceptional player. And I believe Mike was actually great friends with Tony throughout his career. Invited him along to celebration when he hit his 500th home run. I think that's mentioned in the book. But basically, the author, Mark Weingartner, just follows Tony around. He goes to games with him. It's sort of a great picture of small town America, because Tony's like the kind of scout. He really kind of gets to know the players. He gets to know their families. And that's one of the things that makes him so great. So you kind of get this picture of a man who's so dedicated to his job. He will literally do anything with these players and families. At one point, he signs a player, I think it's for $4,000, that every other team has offered him $100,000. And he has such a good relationship with the player that they still agree to sign with him rather than any of the other teams. So, yeah, sort of a wonderful, charismatic guy who's got all these kind of interesting, unique ideas about baseball and coaching. And I think what I really liked about it is just he is such a personality. He tells these stories and they sound so outlandish that you can't believe they're ever true. But he's so good at telling them, you want to believe that they are. And it's never really entirely clear whether all of them are or not, but it doesn't really matter in the end. And I will issue one other warning. In the edition I read, there is kind of a spoiler in the intro, which is actually written by Dan Okren, who I believe has been on Justin's podcast. Yeah, and he kind of gives something away about the book, which is fairly seminal event, and it will make you read it in a whole different light. I'm not sure whether I liked knowing about it before or not. I've kind of come around to the idea that I did. I won't give away what it is, so maybe this will make people more interested to read it, but it's kind of a pretty big spoiler, I guess people would consider it to be. So that kind of makes you read the book in a whole different light as well. So yeah, that's kind of my pick. It's a bit more niche. I think lots of people won't have read it because it hasn't been particularly common, I think. And it certainly may be harder to get hold of in the UK, but if you can, I would really recommend it.
So Justin, we'll come to you next. Firstly, I don't know if you have read Prophet of the Sandlots. If you have, then please feel free to comment. And if you... Even if you haven't, can you just sort of tell us what your first choice is and explain to us why you've chosen it?
Well, yeah, I have actually not read Prophets of the Sandlot. It's one of those ones that's on my list, you know, my rather lengthy list of books I want to get to. But it's definitely one that I have heard great things about throughout the years. And I don't know if I've ever made any effort to contact the author or not. There's some of the author's books where I like look them up and just can't find them and sort of move on to the next book. So I don't even remember, honestly. I'll have to go back and look. But that's definitely one that sounds like it would make for a good episode. So now when I was putting together my list, I kind of went back and forth on whether I should go for like obvious choices or try to get things that are a little more obscure, since obviously I've had the opportunity to read a lot of baseball books over the years. But I figure at the end of the day, it made most sense to go just with most obvious things, because I think if we're trying to give people a good introduction to baseball books, might as well go with the classics. So my first choice is, I think, what a lot of people consider the greatest baseball book of all time, and that's The Glory of Their Times by Lawrence Ritter, which was published in 1966. And what it is he spent 4 years from 1962 to 1966, where he went around, like literally driving around America to find ball players who had played in the major leagues in the early part of the 20th century, basically people who are contemporaries of Ty Cobb, you know, dead ball era players. And he ended up talking to, I don't know, 20 some of them, but you know, he talked to guys like Heinie Groh and Harry Hooper, Sam Crawford, Al Bridwell, Davy Jones, a lot of some Hall of Famers, but some players who were a little bit more obscure. And they were old men by the time he talked to them. They were in their 70s or so, and even 80s, I guess, in some cases. And he basically just tape recorded their memories and then turned it into a book where each player gets a chapter where they talk about their memories of being major league players. And it's just a really fascinating look at that era of baseball. And Ritter is the really good writer. And there was some controversy later on when his original tapes got released to the Hall of Fame, and then they were released on audio CDs. And people went back and compared the recordings to what was actually in the book. And they found that he hadn't changed any information. He hadn't, like, you know, made up any facts or anything, but he had really kind of cleaned up some of the language and made it more colorful. And where somebody said, "Oh yeah, I slid into third," he said, "I slid into third with a cloud of dust, you know, around me." And he would just add like colorful language to it. But I'll be honest, the colorful language makes it a lot more readable. So I'm not sure that was necessarily a bad thing. But anyway, it's a really fun read, and it's a book you can get through in a couple of days just because it's so conversational. And, you know, as an oral history, it's literally conversational. But that's one that I think that's the first book I always recommend to people who want to get into baseball books, because it's so interesting and it's so well done.
Awesome. Certainly, that's one that's going to go right on my list, because I've not read that one, nor have I actually heard of it, giving away my ignorance. How about you two? Had either of you heard of that one or read it?
Yeah, I have read it, and I think I really loved it as well. And what I like about it is it's kind of another thing that's similar to my first choice. I think you really get a fantastic picture of a world that's kind of a bit lost now. You know, there are stories about some of these players, you know, they're 15 years old and they just hop on a train and turn up at the ballpark and say, "Oh, give me a trial," kind of thing. You know, these types of stories, you know, they're kind of the barnstorming type tours and all this kind of stuff that just wouldn't happen now, the way that the game is structured. And, you know, teams have got scouts everywhere. And I think that's kind of the same with the Prophet of the Sandlots. You know, this guy's driving all over the country trying to find sleepers everywhere. And these guys don't really exist so much anymore, because the information and the resources that major league teams have at disposal now is so different. And I think the glory of their time is really kind of, it's something very romantic about some of the stories about how these guys got into baseball and some of the things that you just would never see happen to major league teams now. It's sort of much more anarchic, really. And I think that's one of the most fun things about hearing these guys talk about sort of the early days of the major leagues.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's one of the really fascinating parts about it. Like you said, these guys, so many of them, you know, they quit high school, or they quit, you know, they're on the farm somewhere, they sign with a minor league team, and within a month they're playing in the majors. You know, it's like, that's how informal it was back then. They didn't have the sophisticated scouting, and they didn't really have a lot of ways of getting information from, you know, Iowa. And if you're a major league team, you didn't really have a lot of ways of getting information about baseball players in Iowa, except your own network of scouts, which was very informal. And yeah, it's a really fascinating look about how different being a major league player was than it is today.
I've not read it, but again, it's yet another book that's been on Justin's podcast or mentioned by Justin that's going to go on yet another big list. Keep going and keep growing. Justin, if you could write to my wife and let her know where.
Well, I will tell you, Glory of the Times is one you can get through pretty quickly. It's not going to take you a month to read it. And I will not have that featured on the podcast because Lawrence Ritter has passed away. Although I am thinking of some ways of doing episodes on books by authors who have passed away, like maybe having authors who were influenced or have, you know, were particularly like the books come in and talk about them, maybe do a round table or something. So I'm kind of experimenting a little with that kind of thing. But anyway, I unfortunately will not have a chance to talk to Lawrence Ritter.
So watch this space on how Lawrence Ritter gets his sort of baseball by the book eulogy. So I've left myself to last, and I didn't think how I was going to introduce it. So I guess I'm going to sort of rather ham-fistedly introduce myself. Normally we talk this through, but here we go. So from one elegy to a lost view of baseball to another, I think. So my first choice is a book called You Gotta Have War, which is by Robert or Bob Whiting, as he is more colloquially known. So You Gotta Have War is, if you like, a biography of the Nippon Baseball League in Japan. So it's about the transfer and acceptance of baseball as the national sport of Japan. I read this really recently, and it's gone right to the top of my list of favorite baseball books. I'm not picking this to be obtuse. For those of you who've listened many times before, and those of you maybe on this call expecting that's why I've chosen it, I've chosen it for the reasons that I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, that I think it's a really fascinating sort of expose, if you will, not just of the sport of baseball in Japan, but of Japanese culture on the whole. And it does a really good job of explaining why baseball is the sport that's taken hold in Japan rather than basketball or soccer or any other number of globally important sports, and how it sort of is an extension of samurai culture. It's really, really a fascinating read. Again, much like the Lawrence Ritter book that Justin's just spoken about, a real easy page turner. The third, it's sort of split into two. So the first half talks about how baseball took hold in Japan and how it developed as a professional sport from beginnings as a very amateur thing, amateur sport, and how some of the early professional players, much like some of the big MLB stars like Ted Williams, took part in the war, in the Second World War. There's a really harrowing but absolutely amazing passage where he talks about one of the most famous players in MPB at the time was actually a kamikaze pilot during the Second World War. It's one of the most arresting passages in a baseball book that I've ever read. So that's kind of the first half of it. The second half of it is an exploration through the experiences of a number of the bigger name American players who played in the MPB in the 70s and 80s. They're gaijins, as they call them in Japan. And it's guys like Reggie Smith, Bob Horner, most famously, and less famously, players like Warren Cromarty and the Lee brothers, LeRon and Leon. Yes, you heard that right. LeRon and Leon Lee. Don't say that after a few too many beers. It's about their experiences in Japan and how they were seen as a sort of necessary evil in order to drive the game forward there, but never really felt to be part of the culture within Japanese baseball. It's a really amazing book. It's 20 years old now. There is a follow-up book written by Bob Whiting, which I've not yet read, which is called The Meaning of Ichiro, which is otherwise available as The Samurai Way of Baseball. Certainly the first of those titles, I think, is better than the second. But this one is seen as the seminal book of the three books that Bob Whiting's written about Japanese baseball. And I commend it highly, both to the three of you who are on this call and anyone listening too. Is that one, Justin, that you've read? Is that on your list?
Yes, I have read that. And in fact, Robert Whiting does a podcast himself. It's not about baseball, but it's about Japan. And so I was able to get his email address through the podcast, and I sent him an email and never heard back from him. So if he's listening to this podcast, I'd love to have you on Baseball by the Book. Yeah, but I agree with everything you said. It's a really great introduction to Japanese baseball, if that's a topic you're interested in at all. And what I liked about it as an American reader was I felt like through the use of, you know, through the telling the stories of the American players who went over there and their, you know, culture shock they found when they went over and that sort of thing, it helped me get into it in a way that I think just a straightforward, you know, history maybe wouldn't have. He sort of blends the stories of these contemporary players in a way that makes it much more accessible, I think, and gives you a real good sense of just how the culture of baseball is similar to American baseball and how it's different. And the thing that I found most fascinating about the book is he spent some time at this high school baseball tournament, which I didn't know anything about before reading the book, but apparently in Japan, this is like the biggest sporting event of the year. This is huge tournament. It's sort of like a NCAA basketball style tournament for elite high school baseball teams from throughout the country. And it's one of the biggest events every year. And again, just stuff like that I had no idea of before I read it. It's really interesting for that, I think.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. That's going to feature in my second pick, but we'll talk more about that when we come to it. So yeah, that book was You've Got to Have War by Bob Whiting, which you can get actually quite easily, secondhand copies on the internet here in the UK. Mine came pretty quickly. I'm not sure where to go next. Should we do a sort of, forgive my language, a shit sandwich? So should we pick the ones that we don't like so much and then come back and sort of finish on a high? I think we probably should.
Yeah,
so
let's do that.
We'll go back to the top with you. Your book that you came in with high expectations and maybe left thinking, I quite liked it, but maybe not as much as I hoped.
Yeah, so for me, it was a book called Three Nights in August by Bissinger. So he also wrote Friday Night Lights, which as a high school football book is absolutely brilliant and is well worth reading. So if you've got any interest whatsoever in high school football or just American life in Texas at the time, then go and read it. It's fantastic. But he wrote Three Nights in August. So It's just to get you into it, the old strap line used to be human nature and not statistics dictate the outcome of a ball game. Now, admittedly, when I bought it, which is my copy here, it doesn't have that on the strap line, so I didn't really take note of that. I just heard that this book was very good and well worth reading, and I thought, well, I'll give it a go. You know, it's following three nights in August, it says. So it's Cubs-Cardinals in 2003. And the strap line of mine says strategy, heartbreak, and joy inside the mind of a manager. So I thought, well, that could be quite good. And it follows in his quest to try and defeat those hated Cubs. It's a really interesting book, and the way Bissinger writes is just superb. It's very similar to Friday Night Lights. So you're getting a lot of history of the people, of their backgrounds, of the build-up of the stories and the cities at the time, and it's really good to read. And the fact that it's talking about three baseball games, which clearly we love, but I think even an outsider could read it and stay glued to it. Oddly enough, I read a book called Down to the Last Pitch, which I wasn't as impressed with in terms of keeping the reader glued in terms in the game itself. But the real downturn for me in the book itself was the afterword. So I finished the whole book and thought this was really good, and I quite enjoyed it. And then as soon as I got to it, it's just Buzz Bissinger just essentially slating Moneyball, slating sabermetrics, and just it seems like it's somebody rambling and going crazy about it. And it was really weird. Like I read it and I just sat there going, what just happened? I really enjoyed that. And then like the end of it just really put me off. There's no real chat in there. Oh, you know, there's room for both and it's fine. It was very much like it's eye test, it's scouting and that's it. And it all felt a bit sad. And I was like, oh, that was quite good until that point. I feel a bit so yeah, if you're going to read it, then read it all the way up to the afterword and then just stop.
Just don't read the afterword.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe we should write our own epilogue, which is just Tony La Russa's stats as the general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, it's funny. That's a, I think that's a battle that's in a lot of ways over. You know, the whole sabermetrics versus scouting thing was really a big deal after Moneyball came out, and I'm assuming he wrote it in sort of in that era. You know, it seems very dated now, doesn't it, when you think about it? Because I don't think anybody really still has that argument anymore.
No, not at all. And I believe I've seen recent articles for, I don't really follow UK football or soccer. So it was 2005, that book. But it seems to be happening in soccer at the moment where people are saying, oh, there's no room for all this sabermetrics mumbo jumbo and all of this. And the fact that I can't even think of his name now. A's general manager,
Billy Beane.
Billy Beane, yeah.
Of course. He's now bought. Was it? No, it's not Burnley. Is it
Barnsley?
Barnsley. He's now bought a football team, and essentially, some of the Barnsley fans are now scared the fact that he's going to bring sabermetrics over. It's all going to be stats, and there's going to be splits for everything. But it just seems like the same argument seems to be happening again.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there were a lot of misconceptions around Moneyball, led perhaps by the fact that a lot of people within baseball seem to think that Billy Beane had written it, which shows you how much attention they paid to the book. But yeah, it was always, I think it was more dramatic. It was interesting, wasn't it, from a storyline point to set it up as this stats versus scouts debate. And, if you actually read Moneyball or paid attention to what the people who really knew what they were talking about were saying, nobody was saying that. But I think that view persisted, and it sounds like old Buzz over there really thought it was a either-or decision rather than you can have both.
Yeah,
and absolutely. And I second your endorsement of Friday Night Lights, which is really one of the best sports books I've ever read. It's just so good.
The thing for me, I've read quite a few American football books now, and there's none that they aren't really grabbing me that much. I just don't think the writing's as good, and Friday Night Lights is the only one that's really hit me. And it's the same with ice hockey. Is it The Game? And I can't remember his by now. Ken somebody. That's really good if you want to get into ice hockey.
I don't. So we'll move on. sorry to cut you off the knees.
You have to listen to my next podcast, Hockey by the Book.
Yeah, I definitely will, because I've got no idea what's going on there. It's all too slippy for me. So Darius, you didn't nominate a book that you didn't like. You have, because I thought you were going to keep up your reputation as the podcast nice guy, but maybe you're gonna put some burnish on this. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it's not very good for me. I think I probably spend a little bit too much time thinking about which baseball books to get. And obviously I've weeded out all the ones prematurely that I think I won't actually like that much. And so that there hasn't been any that I've kind of picked up and got to the end and thought, oh, well, that wasn't up to much. But I'm actually, I'm going to talk about one that Tom sent me. Not because it wasn't good, but I think if I felt like it was lacking something, and that's Willie Mays, The Life, The Legend, which is an incredibly comprehensive account of Willie Mays' entire life, basically. The author, James Hirsch, does a tremendous job of sort of chronicling the whole thing. And I think he got some pretty unprecedented access to Mays himself. But there are just these weird bits where obviously Willie never really wanted to talk about it. And you just kind of don't really get quite behind the curtain. There's, you know, his marriage is sort of shrouded in mystery, and they eventually get divorced, but they don't really talk about that much. And he has these periods that he spends in hospital, presumably from exhaustion, but he's getting these pills and you don't really hear much about what he's taking. And he just seems generally like sort of quite a strange personality. He sounds almost like a teenager in his mansion in San Francisco. He just sort of goes to his room and then the maid calls him when dinner's ready. And these bits about Willie himself, I don't think he liked to talk about himself much as a person. And obviously I don't think that's the author's fault, but it sort of felt like, for such a large book, and it is a hefty volume, you don't really quite get the sense of what's going on in his head ever. Throughout the thing. And so I guess that was my disappointment. I kind of wanted a bit more of Willie Mays the man, and you got a lot of the player and a lot of the reaction to him, but I think him as a person, he still manages to keep very much secret throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it's when it talks about his money as well, and the fact that he keeps getting into money troubles, but nobody seems to help him or guide him, and there's no real way that he gets back round. I think there's that one guy that starts to guide him, advise him, and then his wife just basically pulls him away from it, and that's it. He just goes back into money troubles again. Like you say, the book itself is fantastic, and the reaction from the San Francisco fans, where he's not MVP caliber all the time like they were expecting, and it just seems a bit sad, like nothing he could do could please the San Francisco fans until towards the end. But yeah, I thought it was good, and I agree with you, there were parts where it was like, and then this happened, okay, but what's the detail on that? We're not talking about it, we'll move on.
Okay, Justin, how about you? I don't want to compromise you. Feel free to take a hard pass on this one if you feel that this is going to compromise your ability to attract.
That was my first thought, that I don't want to piss off anybody. I've certainly read a number of baseball books over the years that I didn't like particularly, and I've even read some that have been on the podcast that I didn't necessarily like that much. So what I decided to do was to pick an author who is no longer with us, so that I will not run into that problem. This is a book I read, I don't know, 10 years ago, probably more than 10 years. The book is called The Iowa Baseball Confederacy, and it's by W.P. Kinsella, who's the same guy who wrote Shoeless Joe, which is what Field of Dreams was based on. Mm-hmm. This was another book that he wrote about baseball, and it's similar in a lot of ways. It takes place in Iowa. There's a lot of sequences in it that are, you know, kind of not clear. Are they really happening? Is it a dream? Is this something that's really happening with him? And I went into it with high expectations, thought it would be kind of a fun story. And it just didn't do a lot for me. It's about a guy, he's in Iowa, and he believes that there was this league called the Iowa Baseball Confederacy in the early 20th century, but nobody else has ever heard of it. He can't find any records of it, but he's just convinced that it exists. And at some point, I forget exactly how this goes down, but at some point there ends up being a game involving this team and the Cubs in 1908 that he believes has existed. And he somehow is transformed back in time and is involved with this game. And it ends up going on for 400 innings or something. It's Field of Dreams, and you like Shoeless Joe. It's sort of a similar, and again, in the sense that it is what I think the literary word for it is magic realism. And I guess that I'm just not really into magic realism. The book didn't do a lot for me. I mean, it wasn't my cup of tea. I'll put you that way.
I was absolutely convinced you were going with Juice by Jose Canseco then.
Still with us.
Yeah, but Jose's still around. I'm not going to piss him off.
Yeah, looking for a baseball job over in Europe this summer, I believe. sign Jose up, get him in the German Bundesliga. We'll take a trip. I'm last, and this is where I, in classic fashion, put on my Colin Cowherd outfit and start saying crazy things as I'm wont to do from time to time on this podcast. So my choice of book that I didn't really enjoy as much as I had hoped, I'm going to caveat it, about baseball, is I guess one of the best known books about baseball, which is Ball 4 by Jim Bouton, or Bouton. I don't know how you pronounce that properly.
I think it's Bouton.
So Jim Bouton, Ball 4, which for those of you who've not read it, which I guess will be probably a couple of you, is a sort of warts and all diary of his season with the ill-fated Seattle Pilots in the 1960s, who, of course, were a team who played only one season before transferring out of the town. So that's a really famous book in baseball because of what it is, because it is a warts and all expose. It says that players took amphetamines. It says that they weren't the good guys. They were drinking, they were snarling, they were nasty to fans, and so on and so on. And Bouton earned himself a reputation amongst his former friends and colleagues in the clubhouses for being a bit of a rat and a snitch, and lost some favor with the baseball establishment. And it's become a sort of signal book within the baseball canon for very good reasons, because of what it says and what's inside it. So how can I possibly come on here and say that I didn't enjoy it? Now, I didn't not enjoy it. I did, but, and these are two buts. Firstly, I've read quite a few books in that genre, not on baseball. So I've read the same book about politics. So Alan Clark, who was a really famous politician in the UK in the 1980s and 1990s, he wrote that about politics. And in football, there's a really famous Irish football pundit called Eamon Dunphy, who wrote a book a bit like this one. There's another guy who wrote one quite recently called The Smell of Football, a guy called Mick Rathbone, who wrote a really warts and all account of being a football physio, so a trainer type guy for Everton during the 1980s. Now, I came to Ball 4 with really high expectations because it's regarded as canonical, but I could only view it through the prism of having read quite a few other books a bit like it and liked them more. So it was the sort of original warts and all expose sports diary. But for me, it's unfortunately not the best one, which is not to say you shouldn't read it. So that's where I was with Ball 4. Did anyone want to tell me I'm an idiot? Please feel free.
Well, I won't tell you you're an idiot, but I will offer a thought on that. It's interesting. I was actually doing an interview for the podcast this morning with this writer. I'm not sure how old he is, but he's quite a bit older than I am. His name is Douglas Lyons. And one of the things he was telling me was he grew up in New York in the 60s and wasn't particularly a baseball fan. His brothers were, but he wasn't really a baseball fan. And when he was 23, one of his brothers recommended this book to him. And it had just come out. It was by a former Yankee pitcher, and it was called Ball 4. And he talked about how that changed his life. He became fascinated with baseball after reading Ball 4. And fascinated with baseball books, and it's like it changed the trajectory of his life at the age of 23. And I think that's really why I think that's interesting is Ball 4 is a book that I think probably loses a lot if you don't have the context. You know what I mean? If you don't read it, if you're reading it in 1970 and there's never been anything like this before, and no player has ever talked about things in this with this kind of candor before, it has a certain effect on you. If you read it in 2017, you know, almost 50 years later, it's just not, I'm sorry, it's 2018, isn't it? If you're reading 2018 and it's almost 50 years later, it's just not going to have that kind of impact. There've been so many books written since then that try to do similar things, that do similar things, that maybe do it better, that I just think the original impact that book had, it's going to be impossible for it to translate to modern readers, I think.
Yeah, it's like none of us were around when the Beatles first came through. So we're never quite going to feel what it was like. But I think that's the point I'm making, is I still really, really, really like the Beatles, even though I wasn't there in 1968. And I don't really, really, really like Ball 4, sadly. I quite like it. So, but that's really interesting. And yeah, I totally see your point. It's not, I think it's, I don't think it's too dissimilar to the one that I'm making. I'm glad.
No, I think that's fair.
Okay, so as I said, we're gonna round it off with a bit of positivity. So Tom, your second choice of book that you really enjoyed is a more recent one, albeit one that's if you like a period drama. So take it away.
I think it very much is a drama as well, and I've just realised that I've picked two books for two very specific teams and moments. But again, trying to learn a bit of baseball history, I decided to pick something that has really sort of come back, which the author ended up mentioning on Justin's podcast, the fact that people are getting into it again, and their caps and logos are becoming quite popular, and also just the idea of them actually playing baseball. And the book is Up, Up and Away by Jonah Kerry. And it's all about the Montreal Expos. And it's a real history of their team. And if you listen to the podcast with Justin, the fact that Jonah mentioned some of the crazy stories that happened, like the fact that they were supposed to have a proper ballpark to actually play in for Major League Baseball, but they ended up playing literally at a park that had a swimming pool at the back of it. And they put some stands up, and the night before the first game, they ended up putting chairs out themselves. So the general manager was doing it, the trainer, local kids were doing it. They're all just putting these chairs out ready for the first game. And essentially, it was them dipping and diving and gashing their way through the early days. And everything they did, they tried to just make sure they put Major League Baseball off. They tried to coax them into looking a different direction while they're working the solution out. And it was just, it's brilliant to read. And the way that the team was just destined never to succeed, but they just tried and tried and tried. And then eventually the fact that the team goes so well and gets to the point where they're almost at a World Series, and it all just comes collapsing down around them. So players end up getting sold out. Instead of keeping the core of the team together, this young, great team, they end up selling off all their players and getting rid of them. And it just, it's so sad to read, because you can just, as Jonah's explaining it, you can just almost imagine the tear rolling down his face as he's just picturing these players and these moments happen again. And the fact that it's all disappearing away from him, and they were ever so close. And the fact that the way it all winds down, I don't know, maybe, I mean, we did a podcast recently where I was quite insistent the Rays and Marlins move, because I think they're just utter shite and should be moving because they're not really doing anything. But If I look at it, like for me now, I'm thinking, yeah, let's get the Expos back. But I don't know. I didn't watch it. Was whether that bad, and people were just going, yeah, get rid of them. They're a waste of time. Let's get a new team in. Let's relocate them. And maybe I'm looking at it through rose-tinted glasses just through reading the book and thinking, yeah, you know, maybe the Expos could.
Oh, I think Tom's been cut off in full flow. So maybe I'll throw a question to Darius and to Justin about the author of this book. Is Jonah Kerry, when he's writing this book, a bit of a sort of in speaking in literary terms, the sort of author that can't be trusted? Justin, what's your view? You interviewed Jonah about this.
No, I wouldn't say that at all. he's writing it from the perspective of a fan, and he doesn't hide that at all. He's definitely passionate. This is the team he grew up with. He loves them. But he's also a respected journalist, respected writer who did his homework and researched the book thoroughly. I don't think you need to worry about that at all. I mean, if you go into knowing his attitude is that he's a fan, I think you can trust the information that's there. I didn't find anything in it that led me to believe he's trying to sugarcoat things. Now, again, it's the perspective of a fan, not an outsider. So that's always going to change things a certain way. But I wouldn't say that he's not reliable at all.
I actually think one of the best things about the book is how much Jonah's love of the team comes across. And I think it really helps him to paint a picture of some of the characters on that team. He obviously just played a pretty significant part in getting Tim Raines elected to the Hall of Fame. There's some stories about Vlad Guerrero in there that are just fantastic. I think at one point he talks about, I can't remember who the pitcher is, but Guerrero's in the dugout and he just basically saying, I'm going to hit a home run off this guy. And he goes up and immediately hits a home run and apparently comes back to the dugout cackling to himself. And yeah, just that they had a lot of characters, I think, on that team. And Jonah, as a fan, I think is the perfect person to tell a story like that of a lost team that a lot of people loved. And I think we still hear a lot of people talking about how they'd love to have the Expos back. And yeah, I think it really helps him to capture that.
Excellent. So I think Tom has now returned. So we it's all right, Tom. We've just been talking about Jonah Kerry in your absence. So did you have anything more to add that you missed just at the end there? Oh no, he's not quite back entirely. Or are you?
I jumped back. Sorry. Say that again.
So I was just saying that in your absence, we talked a little bit about the positives of having Jonah Kerry as the author of that book and how his fandom comes out in every single word of it. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on that before we move on.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, I don't know if you spoke about it, but the fact that he talks about going down to the ballpark and being there with his friends and the Olympic Stadium being full, and then describing how the Olympic Stadium was falling apart and bits of breeze blocks falling onto the ground and just you lived it through him. But it also speaks about Montreal at the time as well, and the fact that they were going through quite a lot of aggression, so that the French side of Montreal was very aggressive towards being part of Canada, and it's really interesting. Again, like the bad guys won, you're getting all of it. You're not just looking at the team, looking at the players, and that's it. You're getting everything around it as well. Yeah, it's fantastic to read. I don't know if you've got the end of my line, but it was essentially, it's not just for Expos fans or fans of old times. It's baseball fans of all teams should be reading this. It's fantastic. It's a really good read. And the fact that, as you say, it's Jonah Kerry, it makes it so easy to read.
From one book that's really easy to read to another one I haven't read Up and Away. Regrettably, I have read Jonah's other book, The Extra 2%, which is also excellent. From one book that is easy to read to another, which is The Only Rule Is It Has to Work by Sam Miller and Ben Lindbergh. Getting their almost weekly reference on this podcast, Darius, you can't not talk about Ben every week.
No. Here we go. It's my prop. Here's The Only Rule It Has to Work, for those of you out there.
Everyone can see that on the bookstore.
Yeah, this is a much more recent book, and probably it should be very easy to get hold of in the UK if you are looking to get it. So, yeah, for those who don't know, Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller are, or were, in Sam's case, the hosts of the Effectively Wild podcast. But sort of through the podcast, they basically, in a roundabout way, came to this offer to essentially run an independent league team called the Sonoma Stompers for a year. It's sort of in this small league in California, the Pacific League. And so, yeah, Ben and Sam, basically for an entire season, they go out there. They're basically the baseball ops department for the entire team. So they're trying to sign players. They're trying to add analytics. They sort of get a pitch FX type thing going. There's all these shenanigans that go on involving trying to pick up guys. And it's sort of a weird scenario, very different from the major leagues, because as soon as any of your players get even remotely good, a team from a higher league immediately sort of snaps them up. And a couple of the guys on the team now are even in minor league organizations. So it's basically just a summer in California, these two baseball nerds having a go at managing a team. And it's kind of, they capture that sense, I think. You know, a lot of people who follow baseball, especially fantasy players, I think, have kind of dreamt about this kind of thing. And there's a lot of trials and tribulations along the way. They've got a bit of a character player manager who doesn't really want to listen to anything they have to say, and he's a bit of a buzz Bissinger, to say the least, about using advanced stats and things like that. And he just wants to do the whole eye test, I'll do it by feel kind of thing. So there's an interesting dynamic with him going on, but it's also very evocative, I think, of sort of just a fun Californian summer. And there's some very nice moments in the book as well, and they really build a sense of community with the team. So yeah, I think it's a great read. It's a good read. I've given it to a couple of people who actually aren't baseball fans, and they've really enjoyed it, because it's not really just a baseball book. It is kind of about relationships and management, and there's a lot of different themes going on. So I think it appeals to a broad audience, and you don't need to be a major league fan at all to enjoy it.
No, I'd absolutely agree. Justin, I think you have had Sam on your podcast before.
I had Ben on.
Yeah, Ben.
To talk about the book early on, one of my probably first 10 ones that I did. And yeah, he was, as you would expect, he was great on the episode. And yeah, I like that book a lot too. The thing that I the thing that always struck me about that book, and you get this in other books too, but really came to the fore in this, in my opinion, was the kind of difference between baseball nerds, you know, guys like us who are doing podcasts or getting into analytics, and the actual guys who play the game, who couldn't be bothered with it, you know, who don't really care about it. I always find that culture clash kind of interesting and kind of fascinating. And I think it really was a prominent theme in that book.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the chap, I don't know if you is Phelan Lentini, a name I'll never forget because it's an absolutely brilliant name that could only belong to a baseball player. That clash between he and Ben and Sam is sort of at the core of the book, and I have to say one of my personal favorite parts of it. But you're absolutely right, Justin. That always surprises me in any sport, that the people who play it don't really enjoy it. But I guess, you know, none of us really enjoy our day-to-day job, do we? It is what it is. So, Justin, what about yours? Your last favorite that we've got to add to our list.
Well, I went back and forth trying to come up with just the right one. I'll give you an honorable mention that I'm not going to talk about in detail, but I'll just mention it real quick. And that's Charles Learson's biography of Ty Cobb, which came out about 4 years ago at this point, I guess. I had Charles on the podcast early on. And this is just a really, really interesting biography of Ty Cobb, because what it does is it shows that the Ty Cobb we think of, you know, the sort of the image of him as this kind of crazy, out of control, violent racist, is not really true. He wasn't quite as bad a person as we think he was. There's not really a whole lot of evidence that he was particularly racist. And he gets into a lot of detail about how those misconceptions came about. So I definitely recommend that one. But the one that I actually picked was one of the things, if you listen to my podcast or you know me, one of the things you'll know is that I'm really interested in the intersection of baseball and American history. I'm always, that's a fascinating thing for me. So the book I'm going to talk about is called Baseball's Great Experiment. And it was by an author named Jules Teigel. And it's about the integration of Major League Baseball with the coming of Jackie Robinson. But it goes beyond just Jackie Robinson. Obviously, there's a lot of it is about Robinson and the Dodgers, but it starts even before the Dodgers signed Jackie Robinson. It goes after he's already established in the major leagues and follows the years of integration, the years that it took for integration to fully come into the minor leagues, particularly in the South, and, you know, places that had all sorts of, you know, Jim Crow laws in effect and that sort of thing. And it's just a really interesting look at how that all came about. And one of the things that I didn't really know before I read this book, you know, Jackie Robinson is a baseball story. Baseball didn't have black players. And then Branch Rickey has this great heroic moment. He signs him and then everything's great after that. But what you don't understand is that the Dodgers signing Jackie Robinson was the culmination of years of effort on the part of the black press in the U.S., on the part of politicians in the U.S., particularly in the New York area, who were agitating for the New York teams to sign African-American players and, you know, threatening to cut off funding for stadiums and all sorts of stuff. And it was a real political issue for years leading up to Jackie Robinson getting signed. And then, like I said, the aftermath of, you know, Jackie Robinson's in the majors and everyone knows that, but there's all these African-Americans being sent all over the U.S. to these little rinky-dink towns who nobody's paying attention to. And it was a really difficult transition for a lot of them. It's just a really, really fascinating look at the whole process of integrating Major League Baseball. And I highly recommend that if you have any interest in that topic at all.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds fascinating. And again, one that will be going on my Amazon wish list, which, taking Tom's lead, I'm definitely going to share with my girlfriend. She always going to buy me. I like socks as well, but I get a lot more socks than I get baseball books, sadly. I've left myself to last, which is just the way that I wrote it. I apologize profusely. I'm going to bring it back up to date again with the last one. I'm going to go for an honorable mention as well. So my honorable mention is Where No One Knows Your Name by John Feinstein, which is a relatively recent book from the mid-2000s. Which is a book about the minor leagues. So again, sort of touching on some of the things that we've talked about already, it's those those players who are playing in the corners of baseball that don't necessarily get the same focus. And it touches on that theme again that Justin mentioned about that's in The Only Rule as It Has to Work, about these players that, you know, they're just subsisting. They're doing a job. They're not really enjoying it. That's really well worth getting hold of if you can. But that's not what I want to focus on. The book that I wanted to talk a little bit about is The Arm, Jeff Passan's book about the most valuable commodity in sports, which is pitchers' throwing arms, which as a sort of précis and an elevator pitch for a book that anyone was going to, excuse the pun, pitch me, wouldn't be one that jumped off the page, to be brutally honest. Do I want to read a book about the mechanics of somebody's arm? I don't really. Do I want to read a book about somebody doing injury rehabilitation? Not really. Do I want to read a book about surgery? I don't. And this book is all of those things and more, and it is absolutely brilliant. It's utterly fascinating. The reporting is amazing. Again, as I mentioned earlier on, this book talks an awful lot about the Koshin high school baseball culture in Japan and talks about the reasons that Japanese pitchers especially have real problems with arm injuries, which is to do with, again, that culture over there, which is pitching and pitching and pitching until your arm essentially falls off, which is what they do. And that's in You Gotta Have War 2. The reason that I picked this was not because it's a brilliant piece of reporting and it's got really human stories, the stories of Todd Coffey and Daniel Hudson, the two players who Jeff Passan follows from the time when they become injured through to the end of their rehabilitation. And in the instance of Daniel Hudson, who has two Tommy John surgeries as he blows out his elbow literally the first time he pitches on the mound again. Those are all brilliant, but the thing that I think is amazing about this book is the writing. I just think it's utterly beautifully written. To be able to make you want to turn page after page after page of this book over when there's so much in it and it's so dense in terms of its topic is some feat. And to do it with the sort of guile and elan, forgive my sort of springing out into floral language, that Jeff Passan manages is I think absolutely staggering. I'd go so far as to say it's one of the best books I've read in the last 10 years on any topic, and I would commend it to anybody who hasn't read it. I know that both of you, I think Tom, we might have lost again, but both of you who are on the line, Justin and Darius, have read it, and you had Jeff on your podcast recently too, Justin, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, he was on about a month ago, I guess. It's interesting when you say that, because I think I had a similar reaction to the book when it came out. I knew that it was out and it was getting a lot of attention at first because they, you know, excerpted it in SI and stuff. And I think I had a similar reaction to you, which is that's probably not a book I have a ton of interest in. And honestly, the only reason I did read it was because I wanted to have him on the podcast. I knew he'd be a good guest. Mm. It was incredibly interesting. I thought it was just a perspective that really you don't read anywhere else. I mean, you read a lot of these books, they cover, you know, similar ground to other books, even if they do them in an interesting way. Nobody has ever written this kind of book before that I've ever read. And, I learned so much about it. I mean, there's a whole section there and a theme throughout there about this organization called Perfect Game USA, which is this, I was vaguely familiar with them before the book because they do a lot of the rankings of amateur baseball players, and particularly pre-college players. And whenever I was doing draft coverage for Sporting News, I would have to go through them, and we actually work with them to get photos a few times and things like that. I didn't know what kind of racket this thing is, and that it encapsulates all the worst trends of youth sports in America. In terms of, you know, ranking eighth grade, they literally rank eighth graders. You know, who are the top 50 eighth graders in the class of 2020, whatever it is. You know, and they have to pay to go to these events to get ranked, and it's just the whole thing is a racket, and it's we're not serving these young people very well with it, and that's something I didn't know anything about, and so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. There are different sort of ranks of Jeff Passan columns on Yahoo Sports. And there's the here's a baseball transaction. That's relatively interesting. Here's some insights that I've got. And that's a bit more interesting. Here's a piece of really sort of thoughtful reporting on a particular game, but the best Jeff Passan is the polemicist Jeff Passan, and that's what really cuts through in this book, is the stuff about perfect games you mentioned. He, if you listen to your podcast, he's still a pretty angry man about that whole thing, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he got a lot of pushback from them, but he has not backed down at all. And I don't think he should. I think he makes a really good point. I mean, I saw this thing after I had him on. I think it was, I saw a tweet that, you know, they were going to start ranking the class of, I guess it's 2022 so these are like literally 13-year-olds in eighth grade, and they're going to rank them. I mean, that's obscene. There's no other word for it. I mean, we're not serving these kids. We're not serving their parents. We're just making money for one organization. That's all we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's our choices. Before we go, because I'm conscious that this has been quite a long podcast, we wanted to sort of run through some of your feedback. We asked a few times what some of our listeners and our followers on Twitter enjoyed in terms of baseball books, and we've had some really good feedback. So I just wanted to give a few suggestions from some of our listeners. So Baseball Brit, our friend over in Seoul in Korea, he's given three choices in typically fulsome fashion. So he thinks Billy Martin's Baseball's Flawed Genius by Bill Pennington. He's also gone for The Glory of Their Times by Lawrence Ritter. And his final one is Wild and Outside, How a Renegade Minor League Revived the Spirit of Baseball in America's Heartland by Stefan Fatsis. Cricket Bookseller has gone for Chief Bender's Burden, The Silent Struggle of a Baseball Star by Tom Swift. That one certainly sounds interesting. I'm going to go away and dig away into that one a bit more. Alistair Newell, he like Justin, went for Ty Cobb by Charles Learson, the recent Ty Cobb biography, and for a classic, which none of us have mentioned, Roger Kahn's Boys of Summer. Whilst I've got my controversial hat on, I'm going to say that I've read both that and the follow-up book, Memories of Summer, and preferred the latter one, which I guess is something that you don't hear every day. Gabor Erdos, who is an umpire in the National Baseball League here in the UK, has stayed on trend. He's picked As You See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Lives of Umpires by Bruce Weber. And Paddy Johnston has picked a couple, which you've got a bit of a Blue Jays bent because he is himself a Blue Jays fan. The first one is Baseball Life Advice by Stacey May Foles. And the second one, which has gone for the classic autobiography spin of picking something that's a pun on what the player in question does. In England, those are mostly cricket players who are often opening up or keeping as a wicketkeeper might. But this one is R.A. Dickey's Wherever I Wind Up. That's both a baseball pun and a pun about where he might be. Brilliant. Can't believe that I didn't come up with that one myself. So that's some of our listeners' choices. I don't know. I know that you had Stacey on your podcast, Justin. I know that you exchanged a couple of tweets with Paddy about that one.
Yeah, she was on right when the book came out, which was last April or May of last year. And she's a great guest. And that's a really interesting book. It's very different than the kind of books we've been talking about today. Is more of a personal memoir about her experiences as a baseball fan and as somebody who was writing about the team. Really interesting. And the perspective of a female fan, I think, is really interesting too, because that's something, you know, I think you've probably noticed as we've talked about this. I think that's the first woman author we've mentioned in this whole thing. And that's something that I'm cognizant of when I'm doing the podcast, is I don't have as many women guests as I would like. And it, honestly, it's just a function of that not as many women write baseball books as men. But it is always interesting when you get a chance to read something that is from the perspective of a woman who, you know, comes at it from a different, you know, a different way maybe than a male fan does. So I thought that book is definitely worthwhile.
Excellent. Another one to add to an ever-growing list. So that is the last order of business, other than to sort of say our goodbyes and ask you, Justin, where people can find you on Twitter, where people can download the podcast, and if there's anything else that you want to plug, this is your platform to do so.
Okay, yeah, we have a Twitter account. It's at Baseball Book Pod, and then I have a personal account, which is at J McGuire MLB. We also have a Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and just look up Baseball by the Book, you'll find it. And you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Play. And then we're on some others as well that I can't think of at the moment. But basically, anywhere you can find podcasts, you should be able to find us. And if all else fails, you can just go to the website, baseballbythebook.com, baseballbythebook.libsyn.com, which is Libsyn. And then you can just find, that's where it lives. And you can find all the episodes there.
Brilliant. And where can we find you, Tom?
You can find me on our website, batflipsandnerds.com, writing all about Pablo Sandoval and Padres players that no one cares about. And you can also find me on Twitter at Pedroia's Face.
And Darius, where can we find you? Nowhere, because he's vanished. I can tell you, you can find Darius on Baseball Prospectus's fantasy coverage and also at DariusA64. And you can find me on Twitter. And as usual, I'm not going to tell you where. That's a little puzzle. And you can find us at batflips_nerds. And of course, at the website that Tom's already mentioned, batflipsandnerds.com. And we will make sure that we've got a comprehensive list of the books that we've talked about in this podcast that's available on the blog later in the week. So that's all we've got time for. Thank you to Justin.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
And thanks, I guess, to you, Tom.
Cheers, John. I'm freezing cold. Can I go in my house now?
You can go in your house now. Thanks very much, everyone. Bye.